Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Damage Report. I am John Iadarola. It is Thursday and we're mixing it up. Brett Ehrlich is here.
I am here for one purpose, and that purpose is John is not, he doesn't show it and he never admit this, but he's not feeling great today. So I am here just in case he suddenly can't speak. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I will speak for him.
Okay,
I will interpret his will in his weakened condition.
Yeah.
And I will say that to you. It'll be blah, 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 something, something, the environment. Blah, 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 something, something. People who can't fight for themselves, I'll fight for them.
That's exactly how I sound.
Some BS like
that. Yeah, no, my voice like started to go out at the end of the first hour yesterday, and so I'm really worried it's going to happen because I don't know if you know, but I've been not sick, but sick for months.
Yeah.
I've had like sinus problems for, I think it's permanent at this point. I think I just will always have this.
And how does that present? From my experience sitting next to you in the office, it presents like this. Normal, normal, and then... like just a sad,
yeah. I'm
like
a sad man. I'm a sad man
of pain
yes.
and agony. But
yes.
like once every 3 hours, it's mm-hmm. just like.
And to be fair, while I've self-medicated for this, I've not gone to a doctor, which I don't really have because it turns out American health insurance is not good. It's not good in America.
We need
anyway.
To document this because mm-hmm. John is going through the same thing that I went through like 3 years ago when I was like, how does the healthcare system work?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe more than that, maybe like 7 years ago. And you are having every bit of the frustration that millions of Americans, whether they get their health insurance mm-hmm. through an employer or you know the general system or they buy it themselves, this is the hair pulling,
yeah.
ridiculous. And you can tell
even
by
though,
me because I'm losing, I've lost some of my hair.
It.
Because of this.
Yes, and so I'm having these issues despite the fact that I'm lucky enough to have health insurance.
And hair.
Even so, yeah, for the most part, I'm working on it. Okay, why don't we move into some news? We're going to have a big show. Did you know Bernie Sanders is back targeting another one of the biggest companies in America? He had some great success with Amazon, and now he's moving on to another one. We're going to talk about that. Donald Trump has a new target, at least behind the scenes. It's Sean Hannity. Ooh, interesting. We're going to have Dr. Rob Cohen, who's both a doctor and a vet, who's going to be coming on. This is the week of Veterans Day. We're going to be talking about the state of veterans healthcare in America and what needs to be done to get it to where it needs to be. And you know what we're also going to have? Meanwhile in, what's going on around the world? That's how we're going to be closing out the hour. But first, breaking news. The US has imposed sanctions on 17 Saudi Arabians allegedly involved in the killing of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi back in the very beginning of October. Now that follows apparently indictments inside of Saudi Arabia against some of the individuals. There is talk out there over the past day about the possibility of the death sentence. The death sentence for MBS, the Crown Prince? No, just some lower level guys. And so look, maybe that will actually happen. Maybe these Treasury Department sanctions will matter in some way for their international travel or bank accounts. Maybe there will actually be arrests inside of Saudi Arabia. But as of right now, it's not like they're really going to the top of this in terms of the planning. So this is technically an update that we are obligated to give to you, but I'm not sure how much the situation has really changed.
To kind of equate this to the kind of Arab speaking, I don't even know, to that region of the world, the kind of knowledge that most Americans have of it for the last 70 to 80 years, Casablanca. The entire apparatus just literally said what Louis says in that moment, which is round up the usual suspects.
Yeah.
And
I didn't like your analogy at the beginning, but it's not bad.
Thank you. They're rounding up the usual suspects. I envision in Saudi Arabia some kind of line of succession for people who are next for the obligatory, well, we messed up, so you get the death penalty mm-hmm. punishment. And I think they just were like, who's next?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting. I also saw news that the U.S. is considering extraditing a political opponent of the Turkish leader to placate Turkey over the situation of Jamal Khashoggi, which is an interesting strategy. I would say you could placate them by actually doing something about it, but they're deciding that they're going to go in a different direction here in the U.S. government. Anyway, those are the updates. you can decide for yourself what it actually amounts to. At this point, I don't know, but it doesn't seem like much. With that, we turn to other news. Today, Bernie Sanders is unveiling another big piece of legislation intending to sort of rein in some of the excesses of American capitalism by chopping down to size in a few small specific ways. One of the biggest corporations in our country, which is Walmart. This bill would bar big corporations. By the way, it's the Stop Walmart Act. Just to, if you believe that maybe I'm overemphasizing the Walmart part of this, now he's focusing on it. So this bill would bar big corporations from buying their own stock, a move that rewards shareholders unless they pay all employees $15 an hour, provide them 7 days of sick leave, and prevent CEO compensation from rising more than 150 times above median employee pay. All three of those are, of course, good changes. It is interesting that the 7 days, that is really a low bar that we have not hit here across all companies in America. But the $15 minimum wage, and this is not like just a overall everything, but for the biggest corporations, those who have gotten these big tax cuts that want to use a bunch of that money not to raise wages, but instead to buy back their shares, which helps those who currently own shares, that would be a great change.
This is just another instance of Bernie Sanders getting how to take something very complicated and make it very simple. Mm-hmm. He did it, he and Ro Khanna, friend of the show, Ro Khanna, they did it with the Stop Bezos Act. Now they're doing the Stop Walmart Act. What was that? They originally targeted a well-known corporation and then proved to you that they're doing something really bad.
Yeah.
And they are essentially saying this is a practice done. It's not like let's generically improve the status of workers. It's like here's something we can do. We have been fighting for 15. That's something easy to wrap your mind around. And stock buybacks. This is essentially, and until you do X, you can no longer do Y. Previous with the Stop Bezos Act, it was until you pay a fair wage, you cannot take federal assistance from the government in order to balance out what you're not paying your workers. In this way, it's saying until you get $15 an hour, you can't leech off in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of these things, just putting them out there as potential changes, I think for a lot of people who don't know the current state of things here, will be educational. So he wants to limit it to rising more than 100, CEO pay rising more than 150 times above median employee pay. Right now, it's far worse than that. But I wonder, if you asked a regular American, would they know that CEOs aren't just rich? They don't just make a lot of money. They make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, if not thousands of times, what the median employees actually make.
And this is median. This is not like the average. This is the person.
Which is already being brought up by executives and things like
that. Well, those are total number of people. So there are just as many people making less than this person as there are making more than this person. And so when it comes down to that, they're essentially saying, and that's something else. You could say the person in the middle, if the CEO is making 150 times more than the person in the middle, that's not okay and that's not going to stand.
Yeah. Yeah, and so why is he focusing on Walmart here? Well, he points out that the Walton family is the richest in America with an estimated net worth of about $180 billion. That family owns about 50% of Walmart's stock. And while the starting wage for Walmart employees is $11 an hour, that translates into a little more than $19,000 a year, they are obviously making a gigantic amount of money. And what's interesting is that this bill sets up two different paths that you can go on. You can have the current system, where we do tax cuts like they did at the beginning of this year. You give tons of money to these corporations. You tell people they will use this money to pay their workers more. But if you know anything about the way that the economy works, there are incentives that might lead you to pay people more, but it's not having more money. You're not just I got a bunch of cash, I guess I'll give it to my workers. Or, everything else being equal, I guess I'll just hire more people. It's not like there's more demand for the products. I just feel like hiring more people. That's not how any of this actually works. And right now, if they get that money, they're going to spend it on something, and it generally is buying back stock. That's what happened, about 15 years ago when we had the earlier round of these tax cuts. That's what's happening now in the wake of Trump's tax cuts. Totally unrestrained, we're going to put no requirements whatsoever, no limitations on how you spend that money. Instead, you have the Bernie plan, which is you can still do that. You can still buy back your stock. You just also have to do right by your employees and set up a situation that does not create this new gilded age in America. And you'll still make tons of money. And I think for regular working people that see that, they think this is really the best of both worlds. It still benefits the corporation and the CEO, but along the way, they're not trampling over the rights of all the rest of us.
Yeah. And for those in the Trump administration who are saying that workers' wages are going up, it finally hit 3%, which is the basically how much it costs, the cost of living adjustment. So the consumer price index. So finally, you're getting a raise at the rate at which products you have to buy are increasing in price. So now, by your wages rising at 3%, you are not taking a pay cut, which means every year before this, when wages weren't raising at the price of milk, cheese, and eggs, you were getting a pay cut.
Yeah.
So they've been bragging about how now you are not getting a pay cut. And this is saying we need to give you the raise you deserve and the back pay for every year you are essentially getting a pay cut. And after they do that, then they can go back to the cookie jar.
And everyone can benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like getting a raise. The analogy I think of is like imagine if you're floating in the open ocean, your head is barely above like the water. Like imagine how great it would be if you could be lifted up out of that by
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Pouring more water into the ocean. That doesn't actually improve your situation. Bad analogy. Anyway, okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, white nationalism, that Tree of Life synagogue shooting apparently inspired some others. Thankfully, we're tracked down by the police, and we'll break that down after this. So not long ago, we had the devastating Tree of Life synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh, and there are others out there who are sympathetic to the cause of the terrorist in that case. Now, thankfully, the DC area police have arrested one man who apparently felt like that attack did not go far enough. And I want to give you details about him and his brother and their relationship with some well-known white nationalist figures in American politics. I apologize in advance, there's a lot of graphics, but there's a lot of amazing details in this story that we want to get to. So Jeffrey R. Clark Jr., 30-year-old, is charged with illegally possessing a firearm and a high-capacity magazine. He was arrested on November 9th after two family members alerted police to his increasingly agitated outbursts, including that the 11 victims of the Pittsburgh shooting deserved it. The outbursts occurred in the wake of Clark's brother's suicide. So you have these two brothers, the one that is still alive was saying that those 97-year-old Jewish congregants deserve to be shot there, to give you an idea of who he is. But you're going to get more of that here. Jeffrey Clark told FBI agents he and his brother, the one who committed suicide, became interested in guns back in 2016 because they believed there was going to be a civil war. You know, God only knows what was going on in 2016 that led them to think that that might be the case. Court papers assert that after his brother's death, Jeffrey Clark posted on Gab, that's the place that racists go when they're banned from Twitter, a photo of the brothers wearing masks and holding a shotgun and a rifle in front of a flag with a skull and crossbones. The document said Jeffrey Clark posted a description of himself as a meth-smoking, pipe bomb making, mailman murdering Che Guevara of the alt-right. No confirmation yet that he's a Proud Boy or anything like that, but you get the idea that this is a guy who very much is a true believer in this movement, even violently so. Of the attack on the synagogue, court papers says that he posted a picture of the suspected gunman spattered in what appears to be blood and wrote, "This was a dry run for things to come." So look, if you're seeing this, if you're one of his family members or one of his friends, you see that and you think, okay, I have a chance to potentially stop the next mass shooting. And thankfully, in this case, family members turned him in. Now, what he's actually being charged on are, I mean, relatively minor to moderate charges. It's not, you know, attempted murder or anything like that. But this is a guy that has been watching the things that have been going on and thinks these attacks are awesome. And in fact, perhaps they don't go far enough.
Yeah, he sounds like a really great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like when you think of, when you, I hadn't heard of Gab before this, but when mm-hmm. I hear the, basically, not the origin of it necessarily, but what it exists to do, mm-hmm. which is to have extremely low standards in terms of what people using that social media site are able to say. This is what you fear, dread, kind of cover your eyes, you hope is not going on, mm-hmm. but know in your heart it has to be going on.
Yeah. And look, Gab is the one where the shooter himself had been on Gab talking about, you know, I need to stop them because the Jews are funding the caravan and so I need to shoot these people. Now Gab says, you know, we don't do anything to try to, you know, bring these people in, but that's what Gab is known for. It's the people who feel like Twitter is censoring, you know, crazy racist conspiracy theories end up on Gab and they get free rein to talk about things like this.
I think from a investigation standpoint, I'm kind of grateful that it's there because now you've, I mean, in a terrible, sad, weird, pessimistic way, mm-hmm. because if I'm investigating to see where these kinds of people originate their ideas, go to find a positive affirmation for their weird inclinations, this is where I as an investigator would go.
Yeah, and probably do. I want to give you some more details. Authorities said in court documents that the brothers, both the one that's living and the one who committed suicide, fantasized about killing Jews and blacks and that family members feared Jeffrey Clark might harm himself or others. So we told you that he had the high capacity magazine that he wasn't supposed to have and that unregistered gun. They also had four other guns, a Remington Arms handgun, a Mossberg shotgun, a Beretta handgun, and a Ruger Mini 14 rifle. He surrendered another weapon to agents, that's a Colt 38 handgun that was not registered to either. They also had two kits to convert semi-automatic AR-15s into fully automatic rifles, something that is out there that you can get.
Yep.
It's technically not legal, but it is available. And what is legal is the AR-15 that is the basis for this conversion. And there are organizations, of course, fighting for people's right to have something that stands on the precipice of being a fully automatic rifle. They also found in Edward Clark's room, that's the one who committed suicide, two ballistic vests, two ballistic helmets, and two gas masks. Which, you're not a deer hunter at that point. You're not a guy who's enthusiastic about home defense. You're planning an assault on something, and apparently planning for two of you to go along on it.
I just had a weird thought that you're probably going to disapprove of. This is to all the people who use Gab mm-hmm. and are anti-Semitic people. Gab is the number one verb used by old Jewish women when they talk about what they're doing today. If it's not kibitz, it's Gab.
Uh-huh.
Me and Esther are getting together today and we're just going to Gab. About what Moishe's doing.
I don't even, you've lost me a bit on the words, but I like the irony there.
That's okay. What it is. So you guys are planning your anti-Semitic rants mm-hmm. on a thing where like Cheryl and Doris get together to Gab. Yeah.
Well, and the ridiculous thing is, it's not like Gab is the only place they could go. They could sign up for a beta account on Kosher.
On Kosher.
They could go there, like, you know, try something
bagel.
New.
Yeah, why don't you guys play your next one on J-Date, you schmucks.
Talk amongst yourselves. Gab will give you a topic.
Okay? I don't know, like, yeah, that's.
Yes, okay, a little bit more though, because I want you to understand the context that supposed lone or duo wolves like this exist on. Court papers said that Clark's relatives told authorities that Clark admired Oklahoma bomber Timothy McVeigh, Unabomber Ted Kaczynski, and killer Charles Manson, and that relatives said that Jeffrey and Edward Clark believed there would be a race revolution and they wanted to expedite it. We've heard this before from some of these white terrorists. And so, are these guys just on Gab? Are they just sitting in their bedrooms? Are they on their computer and that's it? Well, no, in a lot of cases, once we find out about these people, we find out that they were actually involved in events. They were supportive of individuals, not just, you know, Ted Kaczynski. We're not talking about just decades ago. In early April, both of those Clark brothers rallied in DC with Richard Spencer, a white nationalist who casts himself as a nonviolent racist, who calls for peaceful genocide. They posed with him outside the White House at the April rally, and the following month they attended another Spencer rally outside the White House. So Richard Spencer is a Nazi. He wants to inspire other people to become Nazis. And what do Nazis do? They don't just do Nazi book clubs, they occasionally get gas masks and ballistic vests and shoot up synagogues. That's what they do. And so Richard Spencer may never pull the trigger, but he is there to inspire others to do so. And so when you see Richard Spencer rally, when you see, you know, Charlottesville, all of these different events, the one in DC earlier this year, those people in that crowd, some of them are just enthusiastic racists, and others will be headlining domestic terrorists at some point in the future, unless, like in this case, the police stop it first.
I'm of the Blues Brothers approach to the Nazi movement, which is to make them look as ridiculous as possible, because that's all I can think to do. Like, I know all those are absolutely valid, true feelings about, like, Nazis. They are terrible, horrible, no good, very bad people. But I would love to see the Nazi book club. Mein Kampf again?
Don't we have a new one?
Yeah.
Could we do a Harry Potter?
Can we please?
I like those parts with Slytherin.
What are your secrets, Potter? What are your secrets, you Hebrew Potter?
Oh, wait until they get to the mudblood. They're going to love that slang. They're going to find some uses for that. Anyway,
I don't mean to belittle. I mean, terrible, horrible acts, but like that's all I can do with it because luckily there are people like you here to say all the very real things about it, and I get dumb stuff.
We're just gabbing.
That's just all gabbing.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. We come back. Like the MAGA movement is won over the adults, but how do you get to the kids? They have an idea, and we'll show you after this. Okay, so Donald Trump very popular amongst generally white adult conservatives. That's his like core thing. But they need to look beyond that if they're gonna win a future election. So they need to draw in the kids. And one company has an idea for how they can start that process, as you'll see.
Plus, they may look like Legos, but these building blocks are a little different. The toy company that's making the holidays great again. Wait till you hear about this.
And take a look at this. A conservative company, Keep and Bear, introducing a new line of toys, encouraging kids to build the wall with MAGA building blocks. The set comes with a President Trump figurine and a Make America Great Again hard hat. That's interesting.
That is what I would call that probably light praise from Fox and Friends. That's interesting. So look, Keep and Bear is the company. They're a conservative place where you can get t-shirts of Donald Trump as the Terminator and things like that. So there's reality and then there's Keep and Bear, and there's no attachment between the two. But they have figured out maybe we can make some money by wildly ripping off the copyrights of Lego.
I wonder if like how legal this could possibly be to have something that is that similar to Lego. Because we all grew up with like Brio or there was a Tyco tried to make a Lego substitute that was just bigger and clunkier and not nearly as painful when you step on it.
and I had Lincoln Logs.
As painful as Legos are to step on, just looking at that video was more painful.
It's like stepping on a Lego. So they're not, it doesn't just look like Lego. And look, there's different companies that make blocks that fit together. But the people looked exactly like Lego people. I don't know if you saw the box, but where it says MAGA, it was made to look like the Lego logo. So look, I don't know if Lego is going to care enough to actually do anything about this. It's some company that nobody's ever heard of. I just learned its name and I'm in the process of forgetting it as we speak. But
I know exactly. It's Keep and Bear, as in Keep and Bear Arms. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I had not actually put that together. I thought that they were trying to appeal to the kids with the bear thing.
Right. Keep and Bear Arms. I like the idea of bear arms.
Yes.
Maybe that's what the original intent was for people to have bear arms.
Let's talk about the intent of the actual product. So Keep and Bear markets the building blocks toy as a great Christmas gift for your kids and grandkids and says it allows kids aged 5+ to build a miniature border wall. But they also seem to understand that this is generally not going to be given to kids. The CEO of its parent organization says this gift was meant to bring some lighthearted comic relief to the intense political debate. The majority of our customers are over the age of 40, not children. Okay, so let's address that quote. This is meant to bring some, what?
Just earlier, you spoke truer than you purposed, sir, when you said Christmas grift.
Yeah, exactly.
Continue.
So let's see, lighthearted comic relief. Okay, so let's evaluate this. Is this lighthearted comic relief? Well, the basis of this is building a wall on the border, but it also has fake Lego people that are meant to be Mexicans wearing sombreros and carrying maracas. So the idea there is either the kids are meant to think or the actual people think that the people coming to the border are just stereotypical Mexicans in sombreros and maracas, just having fun and playing music as they cross the border. It's not a a group of 80 LGBTQ people from Honduras that have been discriminated against every step of the way and are desperately trying to no longer be lynched or set on fire and things like that. So I guess this is a lighthearted take in some definitions. I also think it's interesting that they're like, okay, this is technically for kids, but we understand it's probably more for adults. And behind the scenes, we can also count on the fact that those adults are probably very much like kids in some fundamental ways.
Their test scores are the exact same as kids.
Exactly.
Reading level, pretty much the same. They've read nearly half the Newbery Award winners out there. picture books are more their speed.
Probably, yeah. The funny thing is that I have read that actually Lego itself relies heavily on the nostalgia factor and adults getting it. But this is ridiculous. If a kid ever actually ends up getting it, which probably won't happen, this is ridiculous propaganda, and we should oppose it. Buy a Trumpy Bear instead.
Oh,
kids
my
like
God.
That. Anyway,
if you haven't seen Trumpy Bear, please do it.
Just Google Trumpy Bear.
It's one of those
Bear.
Things that I want to put on all of our shows, but it's just that there's the folks who are like, that's been around for years. Have you not seen it yet?
Oh, is
but
it?
But I think there just needs to be a wide-ranging compendium. I'm only using that word because it's in Red Dead Redemption. Compendium of all the ridiculous Trump things. Yeah. I made a video about that a while ago. Maybe it's time for round two.
I think you should probably do it. So I just want to briefly mention Donald Trump is apparently behind the scenes taking aim at Sean Hannity. You've probably seen Sean Hannity gets exclusive interviews with Donald Trump where no news is generated, no actual questions are asked. And whatever ghost of a journalist deep inside Sean Hannity might still be there, just cries ghostly tears for what he has become. And the funny thing is, while we on the outside can laugh at Sean Hannity, we're not the only ones. Donald Trump is apparently doing it too. According to three sources that the Daily Beast has talked to, Trump has repeatedly and sometimes for a sustained period of time made fun of Hannity's interviewing skills, usually zeroing in on the low quality laziness of the host's questions. It's like he's not even trying, Trump has said. One source recalled, right before the president launched into a rough imitation of Hannity's voice and mannerisms to complain that the questions about how great I am give him nothing to work with or have fun with. This source recalled a round of ripping on the TV talkers interview style and cloying devotion to Trump that lasted long enough that the source glanced at their watch and started feeling sorry for Hannity.
He just really wants a jester. Mm-hmm. That's all he wants. Hannity.
He wants something better than a.
He's treating Hannity like a court jester because what is the ultimate goal of Hannity asking tough questions? It's not for Hannity to end up looking good at the end. Mm-hmm. It's for Trump to clown Hannity, to have the opportunity to clown Hannity. Mm-hmm. And when he doesn't have the opportunity during an interview to clown Hannity, he clowns Hannity after the interview's done, saying, come on, try to give me something more than a softball in here. Yeah. So I can, but don't throw it too hard because I still want to knock it back at the pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, he thinks, he's sold his soul to the Trump thing, Sean Hannity, and he thinks, okay, I'm going to appeal to Trump fans by giving him exactly what I think he wants. And Trump fans, by the way, like Sean Hannity because of that. But the next level sadness to that is that Trump himself doesn't respect Sean Hannity. Like, Trump is a moron, but even Trump can see through what Sean Hannity is actually doing. And I'm not covering this, I just want to be clear. I'm not covering this because this is important. I'm covering this for the 1% chance that Sean Hannity ends up seeing it and feels bad, and that's my goal today, actually.
Good for you.
I just wanted to feel
it's
bad.
It's also Trump's goal, just know that.
Anyway, okay, so we're gonna take a short break. We come back, much more important information. Dr. Rob Cohen's gonna be joining the show to talk about the current state of American veteran healthcare. Very important stuff we'll be talking about after this. Here in America, we are fresh off of Veterans Day, so I want to turn now to one of the most important topics facing veterans in America, that is their health care, their health insurance, what quality they're actually getting day to day. And joining us now on the show to help break that down is a physician, scientist, and host of the Demo Crises podcast, Dr. Rob Cohen. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Very glad to have you here. So you yourself are a vet. You have provided healthcare to veterans. So you're obviously very well qualified to talk about this. And so first off, I would like to know, what is the actual state of the access and quality to healthcare for veterans in America?
It's a mixed story. It's not as bad as it's sometimes portrayed in the media, but it's certainly not as good as it needs to be. The good news is that there's pretty easy solutions to what we need to do if we have the political capital to accept the reality of the problem. The core problem is simply that there are 20 million vets in the country, and the Veterans Administration is now the second biggest department and the fifth biggest budget line in our national budget, $200 billion. And that means we've made a lot of promises to veterans going forward that as a nation, we may not be able to pay for in our financial state.
So you sort of alluded to this when you said how the healthcare is portrayed in the media, and I'm certainly looking to learn about this. What misconceptions do regular Americans or people in the media covering this topic have about the subject?
That it's really bad, that veterans don't ever get what they deserve. The truth is, once you get into the veterans healthcare system and you have your doctor that you can rely on, you actually get seen pretty well. The healthcare records are taken care of. It's usually decent quality care, good quality care, and the veterans that deserve not to have to pay anything don't have to pay anything. So the challenge is just managing this large of a bureaucracy and getting people into care when they really need it, if they haven't gotten into the system or if they have a new problem. And that's really a problem that we have in a lot of parts of the American healthcare system. The patients are aging. The Vietnam War veteran era is aging, and that's creating a lot of new health problems consistent with being of older age. And the healthcare system may not be ready to handle it all. And so investing more money and more efficiency and hiring more talent is of urgent need.
So you have you've previously treated soldiers at Walter Reed, which is one of the more high profile locations for this subject. Based on your experience, if you had control over some of the reforms that we could put into place for veterans healthcare, what are some of the suggestions you would make for how things need to evolve?
Protect the budget is a big one. There are some basic healthcare efficiency things. For example, the current Secretary of Veterans Affairs wants to take routine things like hearing aids and eyeglasses out of the existing VA system. That's actually a good idea. It would reduce the bloating of the system. President John McCain, before he died, joined with Bernie Sanders to pass a bill 13, finally, in response to some of the media reports, to allow veterans who live far from a facility to see a medical doctor in their area. Now, a recent report showed that the veterans that had this ability still bureaucracy had difficulty getting appointments on time. So it's basic, sort of company efficiency, which a really good executive with appropriate resources and the ability to hire and pay the right kind of talent would work. And the nice thing is, in this budget, the Veterans Administration budget has increased in the last couple of years. And so now we have to carry through on some of the promises we've made. It's kind of unfortunate the president uses veterans as a political foil. I'd rather he speak softly and carry a big, actually do something big on the subject.
So I'm glad that you brought up Donald Trump, because during the campaign, he has pitched himself. I believe he once described himself as literally the most militaristic person in the world. He likes to say that he supports the troops. Has that translated over the past 2 years into any actual action, big changes that could benefit veteran healthcare?
So I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump. In fact, I'm not a fan at all. But in fairness, the increase in the Veterans Affairs budget was a positive development. The Veterans Affairs budget has gone up by 25% from $160 billion to $200 billion since he took over. And that is a good thing, and we should appreciate that. It would be nice, this should be a really bipartisan issue, and I wish he wouldn't politicize it the way he does. And then we need to be honest about how we're going to pay for this going forward, because we've made a lot of promises. We could do it if appropriately resourced, but,
Yeah.
That is always the question, isn't it?
So I would like to possibly contrast him with another politician. You'd previously mentioned John McCain, former senator. You had served as a staffer for John McCain. This is a topic that over the years he did repeatedly bring up. Obviously, he's a former vet as well. How has working for John McCain shaped your approach to this topic?
John McCain would never put politics first. And with some topics, in fact, with a lot of topics, it would be really great if not put politics first, if we put the problem and worked across the aisle. You know, Bernie Sanders and John McCain passed the Veterans Choice Act in 2013. That's a glorious bipartisan issue. It would be really nice if, we've got some great Democratic veterans and some great Republican veterans. It'd be really nice if they could together show a united front and put some real political capital behind it. John McCain, when he prioritized something, everybody knew about it. He went on TV, he defended his positions against critics from both sides. And it would be really, really nice if we could do that. By the way, I know the video feed is a little rough. I'm coming to you from the Congo. So just want to apologize for that.
Okay, I did not actually know that. That is amazing and perfectly understandable then. That's very interesting. I also did want to ask you though, you're the host of the new Demo Crises podcast. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
We take on the big challenges of our day. We're starting with what we call the three demo crises: democracy, demography, and demoralization. So that's crises of democracy failing, human overpopulation, the destruction of the environment, and the general sense of apathy that's setting in, or maybe the demoralization that the lack of sort of upright citizenship that this president may be ushering in. And so we're starting with those three. We take them on. We look at them as John McCain would, using the best ideas from both sides. You know, we believe that shared sacrifice has made America wonderful in the past, and we've lost that ethic in the short term, but it doesn't. We can get it back better than some countries really would have a chance to. And we're very excited about it. Today we'll release a wonderful episode comparing the Republican insurgencies of John McCain and Teddy Roosevelt. The big difference was Teddy Roosevelt won, but John get their insurgencies against the Republican establishment. Teddy Roosevelt won. He defeated the Orthodox Republicans, and John McCain had a lot of difficulties. And we discussed the reasons why, as well as how we can learn from both of them to move our country forward against some of the more difficult members of the Republican Party who you could probably name.
Well, that certainly sounds like a very interesting topic. And I want to thank you, by the way, Dr. Rob Cohen, for coming on, helping lay out the current situation. We very much appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, let's take a look around the world. What's actually going on while we're so focused here domestically? Obviously, here on the Damage Report, we're very focused on domestic news, but other stuff is going on. So, meanwhile in...
Indonesia.
Indonesia, beautiful footage as always. In Indonesia, you can ride the bus if you turn in some trash. Under the scheme launched by Surabaya in April, this is one of the regions in Indonesia, commuters can ride red city buses by dropping off plastic bottles at terminals or directly paying a fare with bottles. If you want to know what the exchange rate is, a 2-hour bus ticket costs 10 plastic cups or up to 5 plastic bottles, which the city hopes will help it meet an ambitious target of becoming free of plastic waste in 2 years. A bus can collect up to 250 kilograms of plastic bottles a day, or 7.5 tons in a month. Damn.
This, in conjunction with, there's something that resurfaced on Reddit the other day, which is in Australia, what they do for storm drains is they started tying giant mesh nets around the storm drain where it comes out. And just by doing that, it's like a very tight cargo net. It catches tons and tons of plastic every year.
And bodies. And
all kinds of stuff from Red Dead Redemption.
Yes.
I shouldn't have said Red Dead Redemption.
No, because now we're thinking about it. Okay, but that's a good idea as well. This is something we definitely need to deal with. I know that earlier this year, we did a big segment. We did like a sort of a show mostly focused on plastic pollution. And now I really do see it everywhere. I haven't changed my behavior at all, but I see it. Anyway, that's great for Indonesia. But while all that's going on, meanwhile in... The Netherlands, yeah. Another beautiful video. So in the Netherlands, they have a man, a self-styled positivity guru, Emile Ratelband, who wants to legally change his age. He's a 69-year-old. He's asked a court to approve his request for a new birthday that would make him 49. He says his legal appeal is consistent with other forms of personal transformation that are gaining acceptance and government recognition in the Netherlands and around the world.
Wait till you're 70, because when you're 69, when people ask how old you are, you need to spend an entire year going, 69,
dude.
Oh my
God. I think he heard 69 is the new 49 and thought, but it could be. No, it's not the same thing. Like, and I'm not saying that he's not genuine, except that he's not genuine. But like the people who try to take all of these other things and say, well, it's the same thing as, you know, feeling like your gender identity isn't, you know, matching up with your birth. It's not the same thing, man. And like this one of issue where a guy wants to be funny and stuff is, I would say, whether he means to or not, making light of the actual struggles that many, many, many people around the world are dealing with. So, you know, Netherlands, I love you. Emil Ratelband, you seem cool, but stay 69, okay? You're 69.
And honestly, that's kind of the motto of this show, is stay 69.
Thank you. It's like keep it 100, but makes you uncomfortable.
Way pervier, okay.
So, that's the Netherlands, but meanwhile, Lynn.
Yes.
Scotland, land of one goat. So in Scotland, they might ban corporal punishment, which I will just say, I mentioned this to our producer, smacking a kid upside the head seems like the most Scottish thing I can actually imagine. I say this as a person who's
a little
bit Scottish.
What's the matter with you? Put that button down, you little smash.
Exactly. What do you do if you can't smack someone?
William Wallace was quartered. You can handle this.
You've been doing all these accents for a long time, and some of them are not great. That's pretty good.
Every one of my accents is great.
Okay, that's
and
not true.
And even more demoralizing than you saying they're not great is when you say, oh, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, okay. I understand that.
Don't do compliments with the word actually.
Let's talk about corporal punishment. Okay, so in countries where full bans are in force, the prevalence of physical fighting was 69% lower among young men and 42% lower among young women than it was in countries without any ban, according to a study. And among countries operating a partial ban, including the UK, there was no significant reduced rate of frequent fighting among males. The rate was only lower amongst younger women. So partial ban can get you a little bit of the way for women, but a full ban on corporal punishment apparently does have beneficial effects. And many studies and meta-analyses have shown that this is the case in a lot of different countries. I understand some people, including my best friend, are pro-corporal punishment, but the evidence is there that it's actually pretty bad in a lot of ways.
Take that, Quay.
Don't say his name.
He's been on the show.
Anyway, good job, good work, Scotland, although you're not quite there, but you know, keep pushing forward. Meanwhile, in France. Meanwhile, in France, they're working to stop deforestation around the globe. This is probably the most significant one of all of these. Although plastic pollution is important. France has proposed 17 measures aimed at putting a halt by 2030 to deforestation caused by imports of non-sustainable forest or agricultural products. Five French ministries said that between 1990 and a couple years ago, the world's forest area fell by 129 million hectares, 319 million acres, eight times the size of France's mainland forest. So we are losing forests all around the world. Back in the 90s, we sort of cared about it briefly, but now we don't talk about it anymore, but it's still a gigantic problem. And so they are gonna be potentially banning the import of things that are produced by deforestation, like palm oil, which we talk about constantly on the show now.
Love it, let's talk about Japan.
Yes, Japan, really fast. Meanwhile, We purposely threw them off there. Meanwhile, in Japan, they have got a new minister of cybersecurity who says he has never used a computer.
Sumimasen, sumimasen.
Come on, man.
Oh God. The best thing I heard about Japan recently was that they recently apologized profusely for a train leaving 23 seconds early.
That is awesome.
The most Japanese apology ever.
But how is there a person in Japan that's never used a computer? Let alone,
I don't know.
If I didn't have a computer, do you know what my life would be like? And I'm not even the head of cybersecurity.
Don't wanna be around you with that.
Anyway, that's world news. That's the only stuff that's going on around the world. Thank you, Brett, for joining us. Great to have you on. And thank you for watching. If you haven't already rated the podcast, please do so on iTunes, super important. And we'll see you tomorrow morning. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.